Hello and welcome to Bringing Education Home. I'm Herb.
And I'm Christina. And together we bring you ideas to help create happy, healthy, successful families that are both inside
and outside the box. If you like the show, be sure to follow Christina on Facebook.
And please leave us a like review on your favorite podcast platform.
Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Rebecca Troy. Rebecca is a mother of two and an expert in educational neuroscience, specializing in dyslexia treatments. She holds a doctorate in education, is a researcher in neuroscience and reading disabilities, and a nationally board certified teacher in early and middle literacy. Known for her tenacious, nurturing approach, Dr. Troy brings advanced dyslexia interventions into homes, making them accessible and practical for families. This sounds like an amazing topic because Christina, one of her joys is teaching reading. And so, looking forward to how this develops today. Thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
This is so amazing because as Herb was asking right before we came on, he's like, how did you two meet? It's like, well, you know, it's one of those things we were looking at each other profiles and stuff on Facebook. And it's like, you know, this is someone that our families need to meet because this word of dyslexia is so crazy at times. They don't understand exactly what it means. A lot of people think it's one thing, but it might even be more than that. And so we're like, you know what? Let's hear it from someone who studies it, who knows it, and who helps families. And that way our families can get a little bit more information and help, and then just keep moving on from there. So thank you for being here.
Absolutely.
So first of all, our first question is always, why this focus, why this passion? What happened in your life that made you dive into reading, dive into dyslexia, and how did you get here?
Absolutely. So dyslexia runs in my family. It didn't affect me personally, but many, many members of my immediate family and my extended family all have dyslexia, and it affected them in different ways, whether it was, you know, it took an incredible amount of time to get through school, or it was incredibly frustrating, or, you know, some of them gave up and quit on their dreams, on their careers prematurely because it just was so difficult. And so when I went into education, I initially had a background in teaching English, fifth grade through 12th grade. And so many of the students who came to my classroom were unable to read, but that wasn't part of my teacher training. So I'm sure you'll probably appreciate this, Christina, but, you know, like I had maybe one pre-service class that had anything to do with teaching reading, and like zero that talked about dyslexia. So it was a passion enough of mine to go back and get some further studies in my graduate degrees and, you know, really try to get more information on how to help the kids in my class. But I think fate kind of intervened because I went to a university with one of the first researchers in topographic brain mapping for dyslexia. So, you know, like sometimes those divine interventions happen and you're like, wow, okay, you've completely formed my life in a different direction. And so learning from her was so tremendous and just has spurred my interest ever since.
So something interesting that came up for me already is she said that there's multiple ways that dyslexia presents itself. So from my understanding is not being an educator, is dyslexics, what happens is when they look at a word, the letters rearrange themselves. Is that it? Is there more to it? What exactly is dyslexia, and how close is my understanding to what dyslexia is?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So dyslexia is actually neurobiological in origin. So if you were to put two kids next to each other and just have them close their eyes, their brains would look exactly the same. But if you put those two kids next to each other and you ask them to do a language task, like here, spell this, or read this word, or even recall things auditorily, like I'm going to give you a list of things and I want you to remember what they are. You can look at the brain of the child without dyslexia and notice that there's a lot of brain activity in this area in the back of the brain that's called the occipital lobe, where the vision is controlled. And then there's also significant activity here in what's called the parietal temporal lobes, where the hearing component of language resides. So it's this pairing between what you see and what you hear. And so for a typical kid, those areas light up, They're able to put letters and sounds together. They're able to read, they're able to spell, and those things happen and progress very naturally. But for a child with dyslexia, there's actually a very, very different neurological profile when they're encountering language. So almost nothing happens at all in the back of the brain with the occipital lobe, and it's far less activity in the parietal temporal lobe. So that's why things like, okay, we're going to work really, really hard and we're going to decode this word cat. K-a-t. Yes, you've got it. Great job. And then two lines later, you come to the same exact word and it's like you've never seen it before, ever. It's that misfire between what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing, like they're not connecting together. That can also manifest in spelling. So I might be spelling a word and I'm going to add a letter, or I'm going to omit a letter, maybe I even omit an entire syllable. And it's again, that disconnect between what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing. And so a lot of people have this misconception that it's just seeing letters backwards. Yes, that can happen, again, because this visual part of the brain isn't activated. So sure, I might see it backwards. I might write it upside down, and that's part of it, but it's a far bigger profile that isn't going to be resolved by trying harder or reading more.
Wow. And even 27 years of teaching, I have never gotten that specific of a definition or understanding of where it is. And a lot of it, I assume, is because now we can actually get pictures of brains. I mean, for so many years, we didn't know what was happening inside the brain. We just know the children weren't able to make those connections the right way.
Right. And so what's really interesting is if you look back in the literature, there have been studies on this for about 40 years already. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's just really taken a long time for those things to become practice or to be integrated. And so even still, you can look at a lot of curriculum materials and they aren't prepared for children who have this. And so it really does require something above and beyond and more than just a typical language arts curriculum.
And another like foundational question is, you said that there's a lot of people in your family with dyslexia. Is it hereditary? Is it, how does it?
Tracking it, yeah, that way.
Great question. Absolutely. So there's a little bit of dissension on how much, but you know, the research would say 54 to 84% heritable. So yes, highly likely that if one person in your family has it, that somebody else within either your immediate or extended family also has it.
Okay, so that totally makes sense, because I've had parents come to me and say, well, we have dyslexia in our family, so it's got to be that. That's why my child is not reading. And I always took a step back and said, well, hold on, that might be true. And let's just make sure we're covering all of the bases, because we know children learn in different ways. So that will, yeah, that lets me actually give more, credibility is the wrong word, because I believed my parents, but at the same time, it's like, well, let's just check out some other things. So that will help me know that, yeah, no, we really need to look at that a little bit closer.
So how often does dyslexia, like there's nobody in the family with dyslexia, and then we have a child with dyslexia. How weird is that? And how does that like come about?
Great question. So yeah, it can happen. Dyslexia can also be caused by environmental factors. So if, let's just say, something like COVID happens and we really don't have access to a lot of the same literacy rich materials, or we're not exposing the brain to language in those early years the way that we might have before, then you can develop those skills, or your brain can not perform in those ways just as equally as if you were born with it. So I think that we are seeing a lot more cases of it, at least we are, because of COVID and people's lack of ability to get some of that early instruction.
And can I jump in here? Because sure. This one's super important. So what you just said was that whole literacy rich foundation being not having the experiences and stuff that COVID happened. That's one of the things that we try to get our parents to understand that we work with, is that your child needs non-technology life experiences, rich experiences as they're growing, when they're little toddlers, right? The picking up the leaves, the climbing on the play structure, the seeing the different things, so their eyes and their brains can develop. And if our families aren't doing that, they may be hindering their children. So please, families, make sure your child is getting lots of experiences in those toddler and young years, so their brains and their differences and all those different things that connect can be developed.
Absolutely. And to your point, I mean, I think a lot of parents know to read to their children, or at least they've heard that before. And so that becomes critical for families with dyslexia because their capacity to listen to stories or comprehend stories that are read to them is typically very, very high. I mean, I would say that for most children with dyslexia, they have an average or above average intelligence. And so it's not that they can't understand it. It's just that when they're having to do it themselves, there's that neurological breakdown, and then it becomes very, very difficult for them to engage in those literacy tasks.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So where I was going to go with my question was, I've actually hurt my head. I suffered a traumatic brain injury, and that made reading more difficult for me as well. So are there like traumatic brain injuries in children that can bring about dyslexia? Is that known?
Sure. I mean, I would be curious. Did you hit the back of your head? I mean, did it have anything to do with the occipital lobe or the parietal temporal lobe of your brain?
Oh, so I went and actually had my brain scanned at one of the Amon clinics, and it came back as a series of traumatic brain injuries. I played hard all my life. I snowboarded, so my last five or six concussions were all snowboarding. So I damaged every part of my brain. So all four quadrants, the sides, the back. The only part that's like fully intact is my anterior cingulate, which controls the worry and the anxiety part of me. So that's overactive. So, you know, it just makes things really interesting. But yeah, so one of the things after is I noticed that I can still read really well, but a lot of my comprehension goes away. And sometimes I'll end up reading the same paragraph like five or six times. And it's like, wow, I thought I read this already. And before it actually sinks in.
Yeah, you know, I would suspect that it's highly likely that that had a relationship to the damage. However, it's interesting that when reading first develops, there are these very specific areas that need to be activated. But as it becomes more automatic and reading just becomes a thing that you can do what we call reflexively, it actually moves in the brain. And so you do more of your reading up here where you can connect it to other memories and you can connect it to references, you know, so as you're thinking along the text, you're likely visualizing and you're imagining the things that you remember that were like what's happening in the story or in the text. But when you're first learning to read, that activity is actually in a different location. And that's the piece that really is highlighted with dyslexia.
That's really interesting. Cool. And actually, going back just a smidge, what popped into my brain was we were just talking how dyslexia kind of is in history of families and things like that. And so if your parents, the adults probably have dyslexia, then the kids are having problems as well. And you said that they need to read to them a lot. They don't like reading necessarily because maybe they haven't learned to overcome their dyslexia. Can you give our parents one or two ideas of how to do that? How do they engage their kids in reading when maybe reading isn't comfortable for themselves?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I think audio versions of texts and audibles are fantastic options because you can get some really great voices, you know, and vary those up. And kids love that. Kids love being read to. Kids love, you know, the opportunity to engage with, you know, new vocabulary and rich storyline. And so all of those experiences are really, really helpful for further learning. And you don't have to be, you know, dyslexic or not, to allow your children to enjoy those things. So I think there's some great technology now that you can purchase and that you just let them press play in their room and they can listen for hours.
Yeah. And I would really encourage that, you know, those parents don't let them just push play in the room though. Sit with them, you know, pretend like it's a real book, right? And just sit down and just listen to it together so they can still have those rich conversations with the comprehension and point out different things. But yeah, it's absolutely the audio so that they can not have to read it themselves and stumble, right? And their kids can get that fluency practice or hear the fluency that we're really hoping for.
When I was a kid, we actually had books on tape that were actually the cassette tapes.
You're dating us.
and they would make these ding sounds when it was time to change the page. And so we could actually like see the words that they were saying on the book as well. So even if you do get into chapter books and especially with chapter books, being able to see the words as you're hearing them is also really, really cool.
For kids, yeah.
One of the things that kind of bugged me about audiobooks when I first got into them is I went back to an audiobook that I read as a kid, and the author read all the names wrong.
Oh no.
It's not that he read them wrong. It's like
your interpretation.
My interpretation of certain words and names, and then hearing somebody else pronounce those words and names. Sometimes that like threw me off so much. Cause it's like, I had the whole story in my head with this name, and then they would come up with a name. It's like, who's that? And then it's like, oh, that's how you say that word.
Yeah. Yeah. I can totally appreciate that. Yeah. And it's, I mean, I think, again, the richness of literature and the opportunity to hear those stories and the storylines are so, so critical for child development. And, you know, it's also possible that you can help a child with dyslexia to learn to read on their own. But what it does require is the reorganization of how the brain is actually hearing and responding to the language. So it's, I don't mean to say that you can only do audio text, but it's important to know that that's a great place to still engage with new vocabulary, to still have the opportunities to be a reader, even when those skills might be difficult.
So you said that you were either in the public school system or you worked with the public school system quite a bit. And when I was there, the school system would never allow us to use the word dyslexic. Yeah, we had kids who couldn't read and they went to IEPs and special education and things like that, but they never allowed us to label a child dyslexic. And they kept saying, well, because we don't really know how to test it that well, right? But what you're saying now is that they're getting closer to being able to use that label because it's more secure as to what's really going on. Is that kind of what I'm understanding?
Yeah, you know, it really depends on the state. So we work with clients all over the country, and depending on where you live, that could still be true now that dyslexia is a taboo word. We don't use it. It is not a known diagnosis. It is going to be labeled under learning disability. And we do not, by the way, offer you any support for that. And then you can go to the neighboring state where they offer dyslexia screening for everybody, you know, grades kindergarten through third grade. And then, you know, maybe offer some rudimentary supports in how to overcome that with support in schools. And so it really does depend a lot on where you are. It's definitely not equal. But I think one of the challenges is that if you do label it within an IEP, you're kind of legally on the hook to provide support for it. And so for a lot of districts, it's really this lack of support. I don't know what to do. What materials should I use? I don't have trained professionals in this. And so now if I label somebody as dyslexic, I'm now responsible for having to deal with that. So that can be an issue.
And that totally makes sense because that's pretty much what they told the teachers behind closed doors. It's like, we don't have the specific training, so we're never going to use that word. So don't use it with your parents that much. So what I'm trying to tell our parents who are listening is, you know, go after it anyway. And even though they might not be able to label it as that, get as much support as possible for your child that you can. And for our parents who are homeschoolers, because we also talk a lot of homeschool families, you know, don't let the professionals that you interact with who, when your children are having trouble with reading, you know, also follow up with it. Follow up with professionals on getting specific help if you know your child is having a really, really hard time learning how to read.
Absolutely. And to your point, Christine, I mean, I think they've done studies on this to say, how comfortable are teachers with the traits of dyslexia? It's highly likely that if you go into a parent-teacher meeting, that you as the parent might be more informed on dyslexia and what that looks like than any of the other educators in there. And it's not because they don't care. It's just that we weren't provided training on that. So it's highly likely that they just don't know what to advise you on, or some of the signs or symptoms, or their understanding of what dyslexia is isn't quite there. So as the parent, sometimes you do end up as that lead advocate, the person who's coming in to say, hey, we really need to take a look at this. I'm not joking when I'm telling you that we're not meeting the benchmarks. We continue to try to do these things and we're not making progress. So what else?
So in an education at home environment, homeschool, how can parents identify this early? What are some of the early signs besides, oh, they're just not wanting to read? What are some of the early signs? Mm-hmm. And as someone who doesn't have access to the public education resources, what can parents do at home to start getting help for their children?
Great question. So I think, you know, to start with, what are the signs? You can notice those things as early as like a year and a half, 2 years old. So if your child is late to develop as a talker, or if they struggle to retrieve words, like they really can't find that word, they have to point to things, that can be a sign that, you know, we're just really not activating some of those language components. Rhyming is a skill that a lot of 3 and 4 year olds are able to start picking up on. Like, okay, the word is bat. Can you rhyme a couple of words that rhyme with that? Cat, rat, sat. They don't do that. I mean, I think if you were to ask a child with dyslexia to do that, you know, give me a word that rhymes with cat, they might say dog. Or, you know, like just nothing that has to do with it, because they don't understand or they can't visualize that here are the sounds. Some of these sounds are going to stay the same. Another one of these sounds is going to change. But to visualize that, again, activates this part of the brain and then the auditory portion. And if that's not doing what it should, then you could notice that that's a real difficult task. We do notice a lot of clients have, you know, whether it's rubbing of the eyes when it comes to reading, or again, like we're really trying hard to decode and it just doesn't feel like we're making any progress. It's like Groundhog's Day every day. We've taught this lesson 25 times. You've definitely seen the word cat before, and we're coming to cat again, and it's like you've never seen it. So those red flags, I mean, one of those red flags is maybe not a cause for concern, but if you start to see the weight of the evidence, like, yeah, we've got this and this and this, letter reversals can be common until you're 7. And then after that, they're not common anymore. So those are things to kind of cue in on and say, maybe we'd better take this one step further. So there are some ways that you can find out if your child is dyslexic. So one of those ways is to talk to your pediatrician and do a full neuropsych evaluation. So those have the potential to be a little bit costly. You might have to wait 6 months or a year, depending on how backed up your system is. But there are also screeners that you can use to say, what are my child's skills right now, based on how old they are and where they should be developmentally. So we do have the ability for you to even take quizzes and screeners on our website. So if you don't have other resources, feel free to use those to kind of help you figure those pieces out.
Excellent. Yeah, that is so wonderful. And, you know, part of what you were saying, when the teachers don't quite have the resources and things, and have the difference between upper elementary and then lower elementary, right? Because I was lower elementary, 27 years, second, third grade. I was teaching people how to read. And I'd walk down the hallway and my older grade colleagues would say, oh, well, you know, we have this child and I don't know what to do with them because they're not reading at a grade level, right? And so it was that constant, like, no, the upper elementary teachers really need to get some of that basic, especially now with so many kids not reading. So that whole conversation of how do you understand it, how to pick it out and say, yeah, this is really a problem. And then what do I do with those little younger kids? And so what you just said for the family, amazing, because now they have some specific things to also look at.
Yeah. And so, I mean, to your point, it is really common that the older the child gets, the more that people have this belief that we shouldn't be going back to, you know, the basics of just reorganizing how the brain is actually hearing language. Like, well, if you didn't get that before, we're going to assume that you could never get that again. So we're going to move on and just teach you compensatory skills, or here's some other tools that you could use. And so just know that, you know, that I spent years working exclusively with high school students, and they were absolutely able to make huge statistically significant progress in a short window of time. But it's just making sure that you have that, you have the right things with the right repetition and intervals so that that can take place. But back to your question, Herb, about like, how do you do this, right? Like, it's one of the reasons why we created this company was to give families access, because what can be true is, like, I'm so frustrated as a parent. Mm-hmm. I know we've got a problem, but nobody in my school acknowledges this. We mm-hmm. don't have any kind of a tutor. There is no center anywhere near us. And if there is, maybe we're driving an hour and a half to 2 hours, but I still have this huge problem. And my kid, who is brilliant, is putting their head in their hands every night, crying their eyes out. I don't like school. I don't like learning. And we've got all of these snowball effect things that can really prevent a brilliant child from growing into their own. And so we offer this support to families so that you could be in your pajamas and you can still help to neurologically reorganize how the child is hearing and responding to the language.
I love it, love it, love it. That's going to be so helpful for so many families. Yeah. Go ahead and tell us the name of your company and where they can find you and everything.
Yeah, for sure. So we're Retrain the Dyslexic Brain. And so if you go to drrebeccatroy.com, you can see all of the information, case studies, testimonials. Like, we're super proud of the data that comes out of our client base. And so if you want to join our Facebook group, it's Dyslexia Solutions Inner Circle. Every 2 weeks, we review a new case. So just yesterday, we reviewed she's a single mom. She's got an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. It ran in the family. Both kids had it. And so she ran them through our coaching program. Her daughter, age 8, went from the 5th percentile to the 82nd. Her son, age 10, went from the 14th percentile to the 77th. So it was a super life-changing experience for them. She was able to do that at home, even when she was sharing custody with her ex-husband. And it didn't have to involve the school or anybody else. Like, mama could take that control and those reins and say, I'm going to do this. And she got tremendous results.
Yeah, because reading is so absolutely critical for all levels of education, because once you develop the reading skills, then you can start exploring your own wants, your own loves, and then you can pull education to you. So instead of being forced to learn how to read and then forced to make it through school, once you get caught up in reading and not become proficient, then education, you start pulling it to you. Okay. And that's something that's sorely lacking right now.
Yeah, you can teach yourself to learn anything.
Yes, if you can read. Yeah. I mean, it's been really helpful with all the YouTube videos and things like that, but there's still things that are just in books, in print, and you just get, I don't know, sometimes a better connection when you're actually reading it in the print, if you can read, if things are easy for you. Exactly. Yeah. And that love of learning is one of the things that we really strive for our students to get, is that so they are lifelong learners. They really want to keep learning and doing more and more with their life every single day.
Absolutely. No, it's critical. And it's the way you see yourself in the world too. So, you know, if you don't feel as good about yourself as a learner, you know, it can have this trickle down effect to the choices that you make and the actions that you take later on in your life. And we certainly don't want families or kids to feel blocked by this one limitation.
So once you get the dyslexia diagnosis, your children that went from the 5% to the 80 and the 14, do they need to continue working with this tools, or once they get caught up, is it just like, oh, I'm caught up now and I've got it? Or are there different developmental layers that they keep needing to add as they go? How does that work? Is it just like, oh, I got it, I'm good? Or do they need to continue working on stuff?
Great question. So when they finish and they're able to have kind of reorganized the way that the brain is hearing and responding to the language, they can do two things on their own. They can decode any word that you put in front of them, and they can spell by sound 100% of the time. So it still could be true that sometimes, you know, they could put an A-Y instead of an A-I, you know, in terms of a spelling pattern. So that additional study of spelling patterns takes a few more months, but our clients go through the program in 4 months. And so they're able to take, you know, from fifth percentile to 82nd within 4 months, which is really a different story than the kids who spend years and years and years of tutoring. If you can leverage neuroplasticity, you can really make a lot of progress in a short amount of time. And so for some kids, especially if the family catches it early, you're on par with everybody else. Like you're doing what everybody else in second grade is doing, learning spelling patterns. And so you can just participate with your class as typical. And for other clients who maybe didn't find out until later, or maybe they had been in tutoring or other interventions that just, you know, had gone on for years and now they're, you know, a teen, it means that you can still make statistically significant progress, but you may still have a gap between where your peers are performing and where you are now. So then that next developmental stage is, can I keep increasing my rate and the complexity of the text that I can read so that I can close that gap? So yes, I can read and I can decode, but it might mean that I'm still going kind of slowly at it and I'm still needing to work at, you know, getting increasingly harder and harder texts over time.
So if you catch it early enough and you get it on track, then you're pretty much set and you get to keep growing normally. If you're behind a little bit, you get the foundations and then there's other steps to help you get caught up, because it's not just like you got the foundations and then you can catch up. There's other steps. So it's depending on the age and the complexity of where you're at when you determine it. But then once you do kind of get on par, then you're pretty good and the interventions don't need to be.
Yes, that's exactly right. You don't need to continue doing those things. You just continue reading and writing. And, you know, if you're a little person and you're learning, like that's just part of learning, is that you would have to read and communicate things. So as long as you're doing that, the brain doesn't prune that out. Now, you know, like if we were trying to learn a foreign language and then we never used it, the brain would prune that out and would say, we don't really need that information. But when you work to reorganize that and you've created new pathways in the brain, as long as you continue to use those, they will remain.
That's absolutely amazing. And I'm sure that is a message of hope for parents who never did get that help and never learned to read, that their kids aren't going to be stuck like that, that they will be able to get caught up and have that normal education process.
Yeah, it's just, I think plasticity is such a powerful, powerful thing that we're just beginning to like scrape the edge of. And I think the more that we brain image and the more that we learn about the brain and what it does and how it functions, I think the better that learning can become. And so I think we're just right on the cusp of what's possible for all of us.
So in our family education thing, like one of the things we say is we use our children as an excuse to actually help develop the whole family. Okay. So we have a parent that's been dyslexic that still isn't reading well. How does this program help the parents? What can it do for the parents of our children as well as our children?
That's fantastic. Great question. So when you work with the program, we would encourage you to use it on any and everybody that's in your home that has an issue with language. And oftentimes it is also one or both parents that are struggling with language and reading still. And so I'm thinking specifically of our client Julie, and she comes on. Celebration is a big part of our community. And so she comes on every time and she'll celebrate, like, I cannot tell you how much easier this has made this task for me. Or like, I didn't struggle to find my words when I was talking to somebody, you know, in my peer group last week. And so those kind of celebrations are really fun for us, because kids can't always articulate what's happening or what it feels like. But when you're working with an adult, they can definitely describe that feeling and that you know, that process to you much more clearly. So it's been really fun for us on the research side of things to say, cool, tell us more about what that felt like for you.
I love that. Yeah. So, I mean, we're shining a spotlight of hope for the whole family here, you know, absolutely. I love that. And, you know, kind of like when I was saying, you know, read the audiobooks together as a family, don't just hit play with the kids, do these programs with your kids, especially if you know that you had a hard time in school, it's okay. You know, act like a kid again, because if you're having fun with yourself and with your kids, guess what? Things are going to sink in better. Things are going to feel better. So just throw caution to the wind. Don't be afraid to let your kiddo know, you know, hey, this is kind of hard for me too. So let's practice it together.
100%. And mistakes actually grow your brain. So you're going to create more connections from making a mistake than you would if you got it right the first time. Mm-hmm. And so I think that humility of, you know, like, we work on things, and that's what we do in this family. We grow and we learn together. And if you have that growth mindset and you believe that, you know, your effort equals your success, you're kind of unstoppable.
Ooh, another cool question. Let's say we have people who are not English speakers and they're starting to learn English. Does your program work with as a second language to help people get English easier?
Great question. So you would actually recommend to learn reading in your native language. So when you work the program, it would just require that you would translate, you know, whatever into your native language and help the brain to develop it there first before extending it to a second language. So you absolutely could do this in another language, but it's not written, it's only written in English at this moment. But as long as you would help the child to neurologically develop that in their native language first, then you could absolutely extend it beyond that.
That is amazing. I love it. Love it. Actually, one question that popped into my head as I've been studying reading and things like that. There is some people who, and scientists and research that says that if kids don't know how to read by 8, that it is like exponentially harder to learn after 8. And I think it has to do with that neuroplasticity and those connections and stuff. Are you still finding that information to be accurate?
Mm-mm. Okay. So 25 is kind of a magic number because it's active and passive plasticity. So when you're just in an environment, you can obtain a lot of things. Like, let's just say we plant ourselves in a foreign country under the age of 25, like without having any explicit instruction, we can soak in a lot of information and our brain can change just in a passive way. And if you're over 25, it can still change. And so there are studies that have been done over the last couple of decades with adults and dyslexia, and they're absolutely able to change the brain. And it's just requiring that active plasticity. So you have to actually be working on it. It doesn't mean that it's impossible, and it doesn't mean that it has to be that much longer of an interval. Maybe for some people, they say that, you know, if 8's the magic number, we just haven't found that to be true. We've got all kinds of clients that are making huge gains far beyond 8 within that 4-month period.
Okay, cool. That's excellent. Yeah, that's good to know. Because I mean, I know, you know, it wasn't that they couldn't learn after 8. It was just as like harder. But I love hearing that that might not be so true. So our families, again, have more hope and more, you know, but being active, like you said, making sure that you're actively engaging in it to make sure that connection is happening. Yeah. What I was saying about, you know, learning in this system, I was an exchange student at the age of 17, and I went to Japan with no language training, but it was amazing. By the end of the year, I could speak fairly well. You know, I still couldn't read or write because that's a thing. But yeah, that whole act of learning in the situation, being immersed in it, yeah, you can learn a lot. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you really like to touch on in these kinds of conversations? Is there anything else parents need to know to help their children bloom and grow?
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of a homeschool audience, I'll share this nugget that a lot of parents have shared with me. And that I wish that I wouldn't have listened to some of the advice that it was just going to resolve on its own. So I can't tell you how many families have said, like, well, you know, I was told that because I had a boy, boys develop language more slowly. And so therefore that's what this is. And if I would have listened to my intuition the whole time, then I could have maybe acted sooner and we wouldn't have maybe spent all this time doing these other things or waiting to fail. And so I would say that for most parents, like, you know your child because you spend every single day with this little person. And so if your instinct is telling you that something is off, trust it.
Yeah.
Trust
it. That waiting to fail. That waiting to fail is not so horrible.
It's like kids. I mean,
yeah, we can tell your kids not up to par, but they haven't failed enough to be able to get help yet. I mean, what a horrible thing to say.
horrible, and really especially for the human spirit of that little person. And so if I could leave with one thing, it would be just, you know, trust your gut. If you have this sneaking suspicion that something is off, every single time that we've had a family come to us to say, I think that this is right, and we've gone through the assessment process and we've dug in deep, they're right every single time. And so I, you know, Follow your heart, follow your instinct, and find out more.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for saying that, because that's one of the things we say constantly is like parents are the first best teachers. They might not know all the answers, but they know their kids, they know their habits, they know when they're not making connections. And so follow that instinct. Thank you for saying that.
Absolutely.
I'm going to actually put on my public school teacher hat here for a second, because if your child is in a classroom and your teacher is doing the best that they can, but they're still saying that it's not time yet, I can't test them yet because they haven't failed enough, please push. Do not let the teachers and the administration in the public schools tell you that it's not time, because almost I'm going to get in trouble if some of my public schools teachers, but parents, the secret is if you go in and you demand it, you say, I want my child tested because we've done so much and I know there's a problem. They have to act if you demand it, put it in writing. Mm-hmm. Almost every single state has that law. So please don't wait. Listen to your gut.
And if you're that involved, then hey, check us out and get your kids out of school.
Yeah, maybe because bring them again, home instead.
Because again, if your school's not there for your students, then your students are the future of this country. They're the future of the world. You know, don't wait for them to fail to get them the help. If you have to pull them out of school to make sure that they're getting the education they need, that they're getting the help they need, do that. You know, be there for your kids. Don't, you know, take the advocate level to the extreme.
Absolutely. 100%. I couldn't agree more.
Awesome. Dr. Rebecca, I think this has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you for all of the information, because I hope parents will go back and listen to this several times. It's like, oh, I missed this part. I need to pick up this. So please go back and listen some more. And right now, again, please tell us, how do they get a hold of you? Because maybe they're like, oh, my kiddo really needs some help and I need help from Dr. Rebecca.
Absolutely. So the easiest way is to just go to drrebeccatroy.com, and then you've got a lot of options to figure out what your next steps are. So if you're in that space where you're like, man, I think I see some signs, but I'm just not sure. In the top tab, it has a button for screener. Click that. And so we'll help you to know with certainty if that's really what you're dealing with without having to do the neuropsych evaluation. It's not bad if you do that, but you certainly can find out information now. And then if you know that, yes, in fact, we are dealing with this and I'm not getting the support that I need, all of the information that you need to take action on that is on the site as well. So I would encourage you to do that if you need help.
You know, and before we started, I was like, oh, I'm just going to let you two talk because, you know, this is both in your powerhouse. But you two just kept agreeing with each other. So again, it just sparked my mind and the questions just came for really, because if you're not an expert, then these questions are so much more.
It's important.
Important and readily there. It's like, hey, I don't understand this. What's going on? Right. And, you know, so even you don't have to be the expert to know that something is off, is wrong. Yeah. You know, if you feel that, if you have questions, get out there and ask them.
Yep. And to that same point, you know, you don't have to be an expert in education or an expert in neuroscience to support your child. Like you said, you know your child. And so if you care, if you can create a loving environment for you to work together for 10 to 15 minutes a day for 4 months, you got this, because we'll coach you through all of those pieces. But I can't tell you how many times people say, I just don't know what to do. Great. We'll give you the system and the structure so that you do know what to do, but you now have the empowerment to take action yourself, and you will ensure that it gets done. And you will ensure that it's to the interval that your child needs, because nobody cares about their success more than you.
Exactly. Excellent. And on those wonderful notes,
I think we're going to call it an end for today. But thank you so much for being here. Thank you for supporting children and families. It's our passion. It's absolutely your passion too. We can tell just the way you're talking about it. So thank you very, very much. And for our audience, thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting us. And make sure that you are making sure that you're working on developing those happy, healthy, and successful kids for the future of our families. Thank you so much for being with us today, everybody.
Thank you, Dr. Rebecca. Thank you, Dr. Rebecca.
Bye for now, everybody. Bye.